Vrindavanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Janabalava Girivaradhare Gopi Janabalava Girivaradhare Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari
Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Paribraj Gacharya Ashtotara Shatashishimad His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivraja Gacharya Ashtotara Shatashishimad His Divine Grace Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Garantara Shrimam Bhagavatam Ki Dai Gaura Premanandi Oh glories to the assembled devotees Oh glories to the assembled devotees. Oh glories to the assembled devotees. Oh glories to Shishi Guru and Shri Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, entitled Withdrawal of the Cosmic Creation, Chapter 5, entitled The Demigods Appear to the Lord for Protection. And we're reading from text 7 all the way to text number 16. So I'm gonna read Sanskrit and verses, and then we're gonna read 15 together. Shastascha Chakshusha Putras Chakshusho Nama Vai Manu Puru Puru Shasidyomna Pramukhas Chashushat Maja. Translation: the son of Chakshu, known as Chakshusha, was the sixth Manu. He had many sons headed by Puru, Purusha, and Sudyumna. Text number 8. Indra Mantra, Indo,
इंद्रो मंत्रा द्रुमस्तात्र देवा आप्यादयो गना मुनाजस्तात्र वैराजन् हविस्मात् वीरका धजा.
Come on, fly. Likes the garland. Fly. Translation. During the reign of Chakshusha Manu, the king of heaven was known as Mantra Druma. Among the demigods were the Apyas, and among the great sages were Havishman and Viraka. Text number 9.
Tata pri deva sambhutyam viraja shababatsuta ajito nama bhagavam amshena jagatatpati.
In the sixth Manvantara millennium, Lord Vishnu, the master of the universe, appeared in his partial expansion. He was begotten by Vairaja in the womb of his wife Devashambhuti, and his name was Ajita.
Text number 10. Payodhim jena nirmatya shuranam sadita shuda brahmanom vashidritaha kurma rupena mandara.
Translation: by churning the ocean of milk, Ajita produced nectar for the demigods. In the form of a tortoise, he moved here and there, carrying on his back the great mountain known as Mandara.
Texts 11 to 12. Sri Raja Uvacha Jata Bhagavata Brahman Mantita Shirashagara Jat artam bajatas chandrim dadharam bucharatmana jatam ritan surai praptam kinchanyat ababattata etad bhagavata karma badashva paramam putam.
Translation: King Parikshit inquire, O great Brahmana Sukadev Goswami, why and how did Lord Vishnu churn the ocean of milk? For what reason did he stay in the water as a tortoise and hold up Mandara mountain? How did the demigods obtain the nectar? And what other things were produced from the churning of the ocean? Kindly describe all these wonderful activities of the Lord.
Text 13. Tyaja shanka tyamen manena mahimna satvatam pate nati tripyatite mechitam suriram suchiram tapatapitam.
Translation: my heart, which is disturbed by the three miserable conditions of material life, is not yet seated with hearing you describe the glorious activities of the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the master of the devotees.
It's not yet sated, that's how you pronounce, huh? Sated?
Sated with hearing. Text 14.
Sri Suta Uvacha Sanpristo Bhagavan Evam Dvipajana suto dvija abhinandya hare biryam abhichastum prachakrame.
Translation: Sri Suta Goswami said, O learned Brahmanas assembled here at Namisaranya, when Sukadev Goswami, the son of Dvipajam, was thus questioned by the king, he congratulated the king and then endeavor to describe for the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And now, text 15, we can chant that together.
Sri Suka Uvacha Yada yudhe surair deva Badhyama nasita yudhai Gata shavo nipatita Natishteran smapurisha Yada yudhe surair deva Vadhyatmana sita yudai Gata shavo nipatita Natishteran smapurisha Yada yudhe surair deva Vadhyamana sita yudai Gata shavo nipatita Natishteran smapurisha Chan Yudhe surai deva Text 16 Yada durva shashapena Sendra lokas trayo nripa Nishrikascha babanstatra Neshur ija daya kriya
Word by word, word for word Sri Sukha uvacha
Sri Sukadev Goswami said Yada When Yudhe, in the fighting, Asurai, by the demons, Devaha, the demigods, Badhyamanaha, besiege, Sita Ayudhai, by serpent weapons, Gata Asabaha, almost dead, Nipatitaha, some of them having fallen. Na, not. Utishteram, got up again. Sma, so became. Mpurisha, the majority of them. Yada, when. Durvashaha, of Durvasha Muni, Sapena. With the curse. Sa Indraha. With Indra. Loka Trayaha. The three worlds. Nripa. O King. Nihishitaha. So, without any material opulence. Cha. Also. Abhavam. Became. Tatra. At the time. Neshuhu. Could not be performed. Ija Adayaha. Sacrifices. Kriyaha. Ritualistic ceremonies. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Sukadev Goswami said, when the Asuras with the serpent weapons severely attacked the demigods in a fight, many of the demigods fell and lost their lives. Indeed, they could not be revived. At that time, O King, the demigods had been cursed by Durvasa Muni. The three worlds were poverty-stricken, and therefore ritualistic ceremonies could not be performed. The effects of this were very serious. Purport. It is described that while Durvasa Muni was passing on the road, he saw Indra on the back of his elephant and was pleased to offer Indra a garland from his own neck. Indra, however, being too puffed up, took the garland and without respect for Durvasa Muni, he placed it on the trunk of his carried elephant. The elephant, being an animal, could not understand the value of the garland, and thus the elephant threw the garland between his legs and smashed it. Seeing this insulting behavior, Durvasa Muni immediately cursed Indra to be poverty-stricken, bereft of all material opulence. Thus the demigods, afflicted on one side by the fighting demons, and on the other side by the curse of Durvasa Muni, lost all the material opulence in the three worlds. To be extremely opulent in materialistic advancement is sometimes very risky. The materially opulent person does not care about anyone, and thus he commits offenses to great personalities, such as devotees and great saints. This is the way of material opulence. As described by Sukadev Goswami, dhana durmadhanda. Too much wealth makes one blind. This happens even to Indra in the heavenly kingdom, and what to speak of others in this material world. When one is materially opulent, he should learn to be sober and well behaved towards Vaishnavas and saintly persons. Otherwise, he will fall down. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jananjana Shalakaja Chakshur Umilitanjana Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Namo Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasaya Shrimate Ramapaswami Namo Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyabadi Pashityade Satanine Vanchakalpatarubhyasya Kripasindubhyeva Cha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. Sorry to be sitting here again. doesn't supposed to be like this. It's supposed to have variety presentation by different devotees, which makes it very, very nice. But we have to do the needful. So here I am. Thank you, Marcel Prabhu. Few things. I'd like to start with sort of, you know, the beginning of the verses that is still Srila Sukadev Goswami describing the different manvantaras, the manus, and
And then there's something that is explained, sort of carrying on from yesterday, in terms of the Mambantaras. So in a day of Brahma, which is considered a Kalpa, and it's 1,000 cycles of yugas, that's one day of Brahma, you have a division of 14 Mambantaras, 14 Manus. And they all, the reign of the Manu is called Mambantara. And it's almost that in each of those Mambantaras, then different demigods takes different poses. You know, it's almost like, I guess, election year or something like that. That, you know, there's a change of different responsible persons in the government. So Indra, there's a different Indra in each Mambantara. There is also other demigods. They're different. So we can understand that Indra is not, although we say, oh, Indra, but Indra is a post, so it's not a name, it's not the name of the personality, but it's a post. And like Indra, other demigods, you know, take this different responsible positions. And also, in each Mambantara, there are seven sages that are very, that are especially mentioned, the seven sages, you know, seven rishis, Sapta rishis. And then they also appears because, you know, there's explanation of mention of the particular names of the sages, you know, and this is part of those Sapta rishis that, you know, they're part of the different Mambantaras. So that's something to, you know, point out. And another very interesting thing is, you know, how wonderful of the Srimad Bhagavatam is narrations over narrations. So just right now, we switch from Srila Sukadev Goswami. Previously, he was narrating about Narada Muni, who was the conversation between Narada Muni and King Yudhisthira, and now back to Sukadev Goswami and Maharaj Parikshit, and now back to Sutta Goswami and the sages of Dhammacharya. So these conversations within conversations, you know, and how they so wonderfully, you know, move from one to another, and you know, you just, it just keep you always like, is so dynamic, the presentation of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's you can, when it comes to literal creation, this is supreme. This is the supreme personality of Godhead. It manifests as a literature. So there's nothing equal to it. And so it's very wonderful. So we come to this verse that this, when Srila Sukadev Goswami mentioned that in the particular Manu, whose name is Chakshusha Manu, and the incarnation of the Lord, and that also was clear, that in each Mambantara there's an expansion of the Lord, there's an incarnation of the Lord that appears. It's just, it's there. So in the particular Manu that is being narrated now by Srila Sukadev Goswami, the incarnation of the Lord is called Ajita. And then he assumes the form of a tortoise, and he performed this pastime of the churning of the ocean of milk. And then Maharaj Parikshit really, when he got really excited, I mean, he says, He wanted to know, he asked many questions about the churning of the ocean of milk. He wanted to know why did he do it, when, where, and also what was the other questions that how he manifested this nectar of immortality, and all the details around that, and what other things came out of the churning of the ocean. So he wanted to hear that, and he expressed himself that, you know, he was very, very with this great desire to hear more about that. Similar to the sages of Dhammicharanya, when they heard from Sutta Goswami, they immediately say, "We are so eager to hear about the past tense of the Lord, all in his different incarnations." So this is just very exciting for the devotees when they have the opportunity to hear all these wonderful activities of the Lord, and you know, and there's no end to it. So it's very exciting. And then Sutta Goswami tells the sages of Dhammicharanya that this Sukadev Goswami was very, very happy to see the eagerness of Maharaj Parikshit, and he praised Maharaj Parikshit. So now Srila Sukadev Goswami start to narrate. And he brought out that there was this big war between the Asuras and the Devatas, or the demons and the demigods, and the demigods, they lost the battle. In fact, so many of the demigods, they lost their life, and they lost the three worlds, or the whole, you know, kingdom of heaven. And actually says the three worlds. So, and he mentioned that not only the demigods, you know, they lost, but they also were, something happened that they were cursed by Durvasa Muni. And then Prabhupada explains in the purport what was the circumstance in which this curse happened. The curse that Durvasa Muni gave was that the demigods were going to be poverty stricken. So they will lose all their opulence. So the way it happens was that Prabhupada explains that Indra, as the king of heaven, he was coming in all his opulence through this path, with, you know, followed by, you know, all so many demigods and, you know, the whole entourage. So he's marching in this great procession, and he's sitting on his elephant carrier, Airvata. And so as he's going in his full opulence, then Durvasa Muni was on the path. And when Durvasa Muni saw the scene of the King of Heaven coming in with this great, great opulence, Durvasa Muni, actually he was very pleased. It was a very wonderful sight. And Durvasa Muni was very pleased to see Indra. So Durvasa Muni took his garland and gave it to Indra. And of course, from Durvasa Muni's perspective, he is giving his blessings, basically. The saintly person, when he does something like that, you know, he feels pleased to see a devotee or to see someone, and then, you know, give something. You give you a garland, or sometimes embrace you, or, you know, sort of address you. And the purpose is actually to benefit you. It comes with the blessings. So Indra was so caught with his opulence that he was oblivious to this jester, you know, kind jester and merciful jester of Durvasa Muni. And he basically took the garland, and instead of honoring that blessing, he put the garland in the trunk of Ayurvata. And the elephant, you know, he feels something there, and then he just go and throw the things and then stomp on it, you know. So Durvasa Muni, when he saw that, he became very angry. Now remember the theme, we covered that saintly person's anger and their curse is also very, very beneficial for those who are, you know, devotees. In general, for everyone, you know, just the one of the lessons that we learned in those passages that were narrating the different courses that were for Gajendra, for King Indradumya, and for King Huhu, is that just the contact with the devotee. Radharaman Maharaj was explaining that just a contact with a devotee would be beneficial. Even if the contact with the devotee is a devotee being, you know, chastising and punish you, that itself, just that in itself, is beneficial too, because it doesn't matter, you know, the devotee is the quality of the devotee. The quality of the saintly person is a well-wisher of everyone. And so the blessings or the curse will have at the end some positive result. And so Durvasa Muni became extremely angry and he cursed Indra to lose all his opulence. And that happens. Indra lost all his opulence, and the demons, seizing the opportunity, they attack, you know, the kingdom of heaven, and they basically destroyed the demigod's army. And they took control. So basically the demigods and Indra were poverty stricken. The whole world was completely poverty stricken. And so we're gonna hear more about it, because the demigods, when they saw themselves in that position, they seek for the guidance of Lord Brahma and the shelter of Lord Vishnu to be, you know, help. And that's how the whole past tense of the nectar of immortality comes to be. And so we're going to hear that whole exciting story, how, you know, it comes from this particular curse and the demigod's loss of all opulence. So, a very important point that Prabhupada brings into the purport is what opulence does to one. And Prabhupada explained to be extremely opulent in materialistic advancement is sometimes very risky. So, for a devotee, opulence are, the devotee says like that, is a very risky business. For regular non-devotees, opulence is the goal of life. They strive for opulence. But for a devotee,
opulence becomes, you know, sometimes it could very easily degrade or transform into great blockages or obstacles in one's devotional service. Krishna explains that in the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, that the type of intelligence, one potent intelligence that is required in the path of devotional service, vyavyashajatmika buddhi, won't take place if one is too attached to sense gratification and material opulence. Boga aishwaryam prasaktanan, what is it? Tata apradita chetasa. Taya aprahita chetasa. Vyavyashajatmika buddhi. And then samadhan na vididyate. That if one is too attached, voga aishwarya. Aishwarya is opulence. And boga means your sense gratification. So if one is too attached for that, then the intelligence that is required for devotional service does not take place. Why? Because one becomes bewildered. This taya aprahita, aprahita chetasa means bewilderment of consciousness. One becomes bewildered by these things. So therefore, the instruction that we receive is that we pray, Nadananda Jananda Sundarin Kavitam Bajagadisha Kamaye Mama Jammani Jammanishwara Babatat Bhaktir Ahaiti Kitali. O Almighty Lord, I have no desire to accumulate wealth, nor do I desire a beautiful woman, nor do I want any number of followers. I only want your costless devotional service, birth after birth. So the devotee, we know that these things can be quite, you know, a distraction, especially if we're conditioned to desire these things. And materialistic life means we're striving for those things, we're striving for opulences. What is this opulence? Well, the scripture explains that these six main opulence that we search, and it could be any combinations of them. Is we look for wealth, for beauty, for power, strength, for fame, for knowledge, and from renunciation. So all of the six are opulences, and all of the things give you followers, give you people who will admire you and will, you know, worship you and follow you, like that. If in any of these things or combination of them, so people really strive for the things, and they can go crazy about it. They can go so crazy that you know, actually it becomes almost like a comic, you know, character. You know, people trying to strive for beauty, and then you see when, you know, their natural youth and when old age start to happens, then beauty start to go away. And then you have people that are going to some such extremes to actually keep some profile, beautiful profile, that they basically torture themselves to the point of that, you know, they look like some weird, you know, creation. Like say, even they don't have to go old to do that. Like Michael Jackson was an example of that. I mean, I remember this guy, you know, in the 80s. He was, you know, he was a black guy. He was, you know, he had his, you know, afro, and he has, you know, he was a very good looking fellow, like really good looking, you know. And but, you know, he have certain features, you know,
But actually, he was very good looking, and he was extremely wealthy, extremely famous. You know, somehow or other, that was not enough. He needed to be, I don't know, some. So he started to change. And at the end, you know, by the 90s, this guy was like, you know, he looks like some sort of a monster. You know, he was not attractive. He was not attractive. You know, his face was like this, and you know, like, and he somehow or other he bleached himself to be white. How he did it, I don't know how they do that, but he became white. He was not white. No. So his hair was, you know, straight, and he looks like so weird that, you know, it was like poor guy, you know. Anyway, poor died, you know, very, very horribly. So the striving for these opulences, and but the devotee knows that, well, I'm scared of this opulence because, you know, this opulence can really become a great distraction. So there was the case of a great, great personality in the Bhagavatam stories. His name was King Priyavrata. King Priyavrata was a son of Swayambhuva Manu. And no, he was the son of, I can't remember, Brahma, then Swayambhuva Manu, then someone else, I think Uttanapada, or maybe Uttanapada, na? Yeah, Uttanapada, and Priyavrata, Prince Priyavrata. So he was in that lineage. Prince Priyavrata, he was a great, great devotee. His spiritual master was Narada Muni. And he decided that, you know, he didn't want to do anything with, you know, the ruling of the world. In fact, his lineage was to be a Manu. So his grandfather was a Manu, his father was a Manu, and he was supposed to, you know, he was the eldest, so he was supposed to follow his father and, you know, rule the Manvantara. So, but he was too attracted to devotional service, and he became, you know, a renunciant, a brahmachari, and he went into this jungle mountain, and he lived there performing his austerities. So he was just happy, in complete ecstasy, just chanting Hare Krishna, living very simply, and performing devotional service. Following the instructions of his spiritual master, he was fully satisfied and perfectly situated. But the situation came that it was time for his father to retire. Someone had to take the kingdom. And his brother, I believe, has been killed. And so the only one who can take that position was him. So his father, grandfather, and great-grandfather, they all came to request him, please take up the position, you know, of ruling the whole universe. And he declined. So he declined because he was, you know, if I put myself in that situation, that's going to completely derail my devotional service. Because a king have to deal with opulences, with, you know, material facilities, all kinds of things. So I don't want to do that. So actually Lord Brahma has to come and on the order of Lord Vishnu basically just communicate that Lord Vishnu has ordered you to do it. And then the blessings, and then Narada Muni came just to give the blessings. Yeah, so Lord Vishnu desires, so you must do. So then when he understood that, then he very obediently say, Prabhupada say, this is how, and Prabhupada in the purport of that pastime, he says that this is what a disciple, this is the example of a disciple. The example, the quality of the disciple is when the spiritual master says something, the response of the disciple is, yes, sir. That's how Prabhupada say, yes, sir. So, so Priyabrata, yes, sir. And then he took up the position, and then he became completely absorbed. So he became really attached to his wife. He had a very beautiful wife, and with, you know, perfect feminine qualities. And so much opulence, children, and this and that. So he did became absorbed in the material thing. So Parikshit Maharaj asked Sukadev Goswami, how, you know, the whole narration of the activities of Krim Priyavrata came, you know, when Maharaj Parikshit asked, he was so attached. How is that he was so attached and he was able to easily, you know, take up to devotional service and leave things like that? And the secret is that he did those, he engaged himself, he took those opulences and he perform the activities of a materialistic, of a king, on the order of the spiritual master. And because the order of the spiritual master was there, he's protected. So the fact is that at the end, he completely regained his perfect position as a devotee. So that's the Lord's promise. So there was no glitch on Maharaj Priyavrata. In the case of Indra, he's also a devotee, but he became very, very affected by material opulence, to the point that he completely neglected, and he couldn't be able to understand and to properly respect a Vaishnava and a saintly person. So therefore, what Krishna does with a devotee that falls, that it becomes victimized by their own opulence or the opulence that comes from their service, then he chastises and he takes away. So when the chastisement comes in the form of becoming either, you know, spouse or things, the opulence is taken away, then the devotee naturally comes back to their senses and, you know, takes shelter of the Lord. So the Lord is constantly doing this with the demigods. Specifically, Indra comes into, you know, very consistently through the Bhagavatam, being corrected in many situations. And it's just that. It's just the position of being with too much opulence, too much power. And then You know, if one is not very fixed, then it's risky, very, very risky. So, like the presentation that I give on Sunday on the Sri Upanishad, that's at the heart of the Upanishad, to understand who is the supreme controller, who is the enjoyer, the owner, and the controller of everything. And that's Krishna, the Ishabashya principle. And if one, the mantras of the Ishupanishad, that if one neglects the Ishabashya principle, the Ishupanishad calls the person who doesn't acknowledge the Ishabashya principle is called a Atmahano. Atmahanaha, which means the killer of the soul. One is basically committing soul suicide, so to speak. Soul doesn't die, but basically you're obliterating, you know, you're burying your soul in heaps of, you know, ignorance. Basically, that's what happens. If one doesn't acknowledge and understand the Ishabashya principle. So it's a very important thing. If we understand that Krishna is the enjoyer and is the proprietor, then we receive our quota and we're very happy with our quota. We're satisfied with our quota. For someone like a king, the quota is greater. But, you know, because they understand who's the owner, then they're protected. As soon as we start to think, oh, I am, you know, this is mine, you know, this is mine, and it's meant for my sense gratification, I am the enjoyer, I am the proprietor, I'm the controller. As soon as I start, you know, to think like that, that's the demoniac mentality. We see in the Bhagavad Gita, that's what is the description of the demon is. You know, he think, what is it? Ishwaraham Hambogi. You know, that verses, you know, I say, I am Ishwara. I am the controller and I am the enjoyer. And, you know, I have so many family members. They all meant, you know, to give me enjoyment. And that's the mentality, that's the demonia mentality. So that's what we against in this world. So we have basically to be educated in this principle of understanding Krishna's position and our position. So that's what is called avidya. Vidya ja means a culture of knowledge. So stop here. Any comment or questions? Back to Jordan Prabhu.
I'm wondering about Indra's position.
A what?
About Indra's position. It's especially, I'm trying to understand in reference to Lord Brahma. It seems like Lord Brahma is like the highest demigod. Mm. Like Lord Indra, or Indra is the post of the king of heaven. Is he the king of like the lower planets and like lower heavenly planets? And then Lord Brahma is like the king of the highest planet? Or how does that
work? Yeah, Lord Brahma, the post of Lord Brahma is basically the engineer of the whole, you know, universe. And, you know, he is the one who conceptualizes and executes everything. He's almost a visionary. He's a person who, you know, makes sure that, okay, so this department is here, this department is there, the whole thing, the whole picture, everything. Indra is in charge of a very you know, the pose of Indra is a responsible pose that governs a good amount of aspects of that whole creation. So there are different poses, you know, and they have different services, that responsible services, and some, you know, they, it's like a government, you know. Some of them are sort of connected, and there is a body that is a little higher than other, but they're independent in one sense, you know. So you have, you know, the governor of the states, you know, they independently, and they have their own, you know, sort of arrangement of different positions. But then there's the Congress, and, you know, the Senate, that is sort of, you know, they have something to say about, you know, there's all states, and then there's the president. So they all have sort of different responsible positions, and ones are greater than the other one. But it's just, you know, a very thorough type of administration. So the exact difference, I know, you know, that the thing that I understand is that Lord Brahma is the chief engineer of the whole universe, and so all the posts. I mean, what's the difference? Say, for example, the Manus, the reigns of Manus. I mean, Manus seems to be superior to Indra. Because, you know, in the each reign of Manu, then there's a particular Indra that comes. So, and Indra is the king of heaven. And Swargaloka, but there's other planetary systems that are above Swarga, which is, you know, Janaloka and Tapaloka and Siddhaloka, like that. So, I'm sure there's, you know, quite a very specific things that I'm not fully conversant, you know, on that, but that much I can say. Yeah. But big time king, the king of heaven, you know. And then I guess you have the king of Gandharva Loka, like Tuhu. But Gandharva Loka is between, you know, the Swarga Loka. So, you know, I guess, you know, the smaller kingdoms that are under, you know, Indra. So when Indra does his thing, the Gandharvas have to come and do their singing and thing, you know. So, like that. Yes, Jitendra Prabhu.
It seems like Durvasa Muni has a low level of tolerance.
Yeah.
dealing with Ambarish Maharaj, you know that pastime. And then I was thinking that one phrase, when one gains prosperity, he can become cruel. He can become cruel, you know. So, but then I was reading in the Nectar of Devotion that a person is really saintly, even though he's very learned, that he's very humble. So, you know, no matter how much opulence or, you know, those six qualities one has, if he's humble, that's the crowning quality. Because all the other good qualities can come to be due to that one quality of humility. They can all
build. The good quality of what?
Humility.
Humility, yeah.
Yeah. Something I came across. Thank you.
Yeah, Durvasa Muni, he is a manifestation of Lord Shiva. So he have similar, you know, Lord Shiva gets his Ashutosh. He gets satisfied very easily. He gets angry also, you know. Well, I'm not sure if he gets angry very easily. Yeah. But anyway, Durvasa Muni is famous for, you know, that you don't want to get in his, you know, disturbing. Even you have, everything have to be perfect. So every time Durvasa Muni was visiting some kingdom, everybody will be like, you know, make sure that you know, you do everything right, you know. So that was Duryodhana's sort of plan when he heard that Durvasa Muni and his 1,000 disciples were visiting, you know, the Kuru's kingdom. Then he decided, oh, perfect opportunity to, you know, stick it to Yudhisthira. So he sent Durvasa Muni, oh, you know, Yudhisthira Maharaj is in the forest, you know, and he really wants to see you and serve you. So he basically directed Durvasa Muni to Maharaj Yudhisthira, where he was when they got exiled in the forest, understanding that there was he had no means to serve Durvasa Muni and the 1,000 disciples. And if that happens, then Durvasa Muni will curse them and they will be finished. So that was his plan. So Durvasa Muni, that's when Krishna saved, you know, the Pandavas by, you know, eating the little grain of rice from the empty pot, you know, and having Durvasa Muni and everybody just feeling like full, like they ate, you know, till the neck, you know, something like that.
As the devotees say, he has a low frying, a low fry.
Yeah.
I remember meeting some devotees like that from time to time. Not here, but, you know, in other places.
Yeah, yeah. But in any case, you know, these are great saintly personalities, and their curse has, you know, they facilitate the Lord pastimes, one thing. They also have a great corrective, you know, capacity. So Indra definitely, he lost it, you know, in his opulence to be that, you know, I mean, think about it. I mean, some of the narrations of the neglect, you know, say Huhu pulling on the leg of the saint, you know, who was performing meditation, you know, Devala Rishi. I mean, who in the right mind will do something like that? I mean, you have to be a little sort of out there, you know, like, you know, whatever, Maharaj visiting, you know, and you come from beside, you know, and sort of like put a prank on the Maharaj, you know. You know, I mean, I'd be shocked like that. So that common sense. So, you know, a Maharaj give you a garland and you go and then throw it, you know, through the window, you know, like that. It's like, are you crazy? You know, it's like, you know, imagine seeing the new Bhakta, you know, doing that, you know. Here comes, you know, I don't know, Rana Maharaj and give a garland to Marcel, you know, and Marcel goes like, Marcel, no! What are you doing? Sorry, Maharaj. He's a Navaduta. No. May not never happen to you, Marcel Prabhu. So, you know, that type of thing. You know. So it's a corrective manner. And those saintly persons, they see that we can, our anger is not like their anger. You know, their anger is also accompanied with their, you know, amazing wisdom and compassion. So we can understand that. I mean, Durvasa Muni, he gave a boon to Srimati Radharani. So Durvasa Muni, I mean, he had access to Srimati Radharani. He was served by Srimati Radharani. So, you know, he's not an ordinary personality. He was able to, you know, in his own body, travel to Vaikuntha. I mean, the Lord corrected him when he got to, you know, when he offended Maharaj Ambarish. But nevertheless, this is not ordinary people. All right, anything else? Yes, Marcel Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Earlier you mentioned that Indra was kind of like a position. What's the the demigod in this, the verse that is Indra, what it, does he have like an actual identity or personality?
Yeah, the demigod that is explained here that it, they took the position of Indra, I think it's mentioned in the in one of the verses. What's his name? He has a name. Okay. During the reign of Shakshushamanu, the king of heaven was known as Mantradruma. Mantradruma. So, you know, he just had that pose.
In earlier conversations, I just thought that Indra was actually the name of
no.
the king of heaven.
Yeah, some we sometimes confuse that.
Yeah.
But no,
thank
Indra
you.
Is a pose. Okay. Thank you so much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.